Well, good morning. For those of you who don't know me, my name is Tyler Jagan. I'm the lead pastor here at River Run. And as was already communicated with Shauna and Nate and Caleb, today we're wrapping up our series called Shattered. This whole year, we wanted to be a church that really works on reconciliation. God's called us to be people of reconciliation, and we want to just work and get better at that. But one of the things that we've noticed is what happens in your life when you've been so shattered, so broken, so hurt, traumatized, abused, by which even the word reconciliation may even seem insurmountable or even maybe even possibly painful. So we wanted to take about 4 weeks just to kind of step back a little bit and to kind of deal with some of the really hard things of life by which may have brought you to a place of just feeling deeply affected by trauma or abuse, where you feel paralyzed, you feel broken, and just having a hard time just even seeing straight. So we wanted to help just slow down and to really walk through God's provision and God's pathway of how he goes about healing us. And so today, with our last week, I'm super excited to have with us today, as Shauna was saying, is Garrett and Eve over from Tree of Life. And Garrett has been a friend of the River Run family for many, many years. He's been in counseling for 21 years. And then Eve here has a specialization in trauma. So they're going to help us just kind of walk through some things and also answer any questions that you may have. If you have any questions, you can go ahead and simply text the word shattered to the number 43506. And we'll get that question and hopefully we'll have the opportunity to answer some of that. So first of all, I want to start off by just asking y'all a question. Eve, actually, let me start with you. Is when it comes to, when I think about our pain and our suffering, oftentimes we don't even, let me rephrase it this way. We're not robots. We don't just deal with something and it just rolls off of us like it's no big deal. Trauma, abuse affects us deeply and emotionally. Why is that? What makes it us so unique if that's our kind of what we experience as human beings?
Well, on several different levels, that's part of our design. We were originally designed to absorb and to hear messages of affirmation and love and acceptance. And then because we are in a fallen world, in fallen bodies, in some ways, our body's functioning as it should. So when we hear messages, we remember them, and then we use that information. But when our experiences and those messages are harmful, results of sin, then what comes out is what was put in. So in a sense, our brains, our neurons, our memory networks, when events are traumatic, the memories are isolated in so that we can continue. But so often, that keeps us stuck. And the Lord has provided opportunities for us to have healing, but sometimes we need help. And when those places are stuck, then we need someone to either, medically or psychologically or in prayer to help move us on into healing.
So these things that God has actually given us to help us to realize that there's something wrong, there is something inside of us, that needs help, right? There needs some healing. Like if you got cut with a knife, you would feel the pain and you would automatically, realize that you need to do something about it. And so God's kind of given us some of those internal things of, anxiety or stress or those types of feelings. And so Garrett, God doesn't want us to keep us there though, right? So how does he go about when we kind of begin to kind of recognize these things in us that we need help to be able to process or to move forward? How does God bring us through that journey?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think there's two methods that people will kind of take. So depending on the level of cut, so whether I'm cut myself or God cuts me in some sense, right, to work on my own issues or whatever, I can either kind of cover myself and hide and kind of patch things up by what? Memorizing more prayer, meditation, you know, the more, try harder kind of method. Or I can kind of allow God through my community to kind of let go and to release a little bit. And what I mean by that is, you know, we have that U diagram that we always talk about where they slide down into this kind of lower level of more of the harder emotions. And so when you kind of look at those harder emotions, a lot of people don't want to stay there. And I don't think necessarily God wants you to live there either forever, because there's always Sunday coming, right? And so when we're in that place, depending on the level of that cut and that kind of wound, we have to go to one of these two places.
Okay, yeah, so let's talk about that just a little bit here. Sure. So, you know, the U diagram and the whole idea of you have Friday, which is the day of suffering, Sunday, which is the day of resurrection. But there's actually a middle piece of that journey and that process, which is kind of the death, burial, kind of the suffering. Can you just explain more, kind of a little bit more of that detail of why it is so important to go through, to process and work through that suffering?
Yeah, so I mentioned in the first service that of all the Psalms, if you love Psalms, 33% of them are lament Psalms. They're a little bit darker. They're a dirge. They're, you know, sometimes even a complaint, but something a little bit more of that, what we call Silent Saturday. And Silent Saturday is the place where we don't really talk much about. We have lots of conversation about the cross and lots of conversation about the resurrection, as we should. But that other stuff, that quiet place of grief, loss. I was talking to a family just this morning, and they went through a recent loss, and I could tell in their eyes, undone. There was no words. There was no hug. There was no flowers that were going to do anything. This was the worst kind of grief. And so what are they supposed to do? I could tell in their eyes they were shattered. Me and Eve spoke with them both. And so we have to do this Silent Saturday work with safe people in a safe community that allows kind of what Eve said is validating, loving, accepting, abiding, and that kindness to that wound. Otherwise, we're going to end up going the other way, which is at the top, and you're going to make your own gospel, and you're going to cover over that you. And so if I'm a, you know, no servant is greater than his master, Jesus died on the cross, but then he was separated from his Father. And people forget, like, that separation, I think, was even more unbearable than the actual physical wounds that and torture that he went through. And so, I don't know, you have kids, you know, when you're gone from your kids for a long period of time on a trip, you miss them. Something aches in you. Something aches in me when my kids are gone for a period of time. And so I think that's where we need to really sit with and be more comfortable with as a community.
It's good. You know, one of the things I think that we think as Christians is my solution is, you know, I gave my life to Christ, and now everything should just automatically be hunky-dory, right? And just can you just explain a little bit, maybe Eve might be helpful, just explain how thinking that way can actually really rob us of really allowing God to work deeply within our hearts to come to the place of true healing that we really ultimately, we desire, and also God desires for us as well.
Yes. So, you know, at the point of salvation, we are spiritually perfected. And, you know, according to Ephesians 2:6, we're seated with and in Christ. And that is an amazing place to be. Our soul and our body are on a longer journey. It is part of the healing. And to say that because I'm saved, I don't suffer, or I'm not dealing with an addiction or struggling in a relationship. First of all, it isn't truth, and it doesn't allow our weaknesses to usher in the glory of God and for him to complete the good work that he begins in us. I think I used an example before that when Lazarus was dead and Jesus was standing there before the tomb, he supernaturally resurrected Lazarus. He said, Lazarus, come forth. And so that spiritual life happened immediately, instantaneously, with the words of God. But then, instead of when Lazarus came forth, instead of saying, grave clothes be gone, Christ allowed the humanness of other people to serve and minister to the humanness of Lazarus, and he told them, remove the grave clothes. He could have spiritually just said, and grave clothes be gone. But I think, like, nothing is wasted, especially not in Scripture. And so there's so much in that message, but it's also, there is spiritual healing, and then there is more physical, earthly healing.
That's good. That's good. So I have a question here that somebody sent in. It's, what does the Bible say about mental illness?
It says quite a bit. We look at all the biblical characters and we kind of think, wow, you know, if I could just be them, if I could just have their signs and wonders and all the things. But I think that there's a lot of misconception on even the characters that are in the Bible that are very complex, you know. Isaac and Rebecca's relationship, you know, Joseph and his brothers. I mean, that was a brutal, I mean, talk about a bullying situation. You can go from Paul to Jeremiah, you know, suffering with, you know, his own kind of dark sadness in that book. So there's quite a bit to be said about the characters in the Bible that have even their own mental illness and their own mental health issues. We're kind of careful about illness word because we want to know that we're just in a broken world, like she said. And it's not so much that we need to label you with particular diagnoses. Those are important for us to work with, but that's not the end-all be-all. We are treated and we treat others as fellow Adam and Eves who have been harmed, right? And we've fallen. And so to speak to that takes a little bit of extra care.
Yes, could you repeat the question?
So the question is what does the Bible say about mental illness?
Yes, so my first thought was about King Saul, you know, and how he was in torment. And I don't think that it's because we're in sin specifically that we struggle with mental illness. Those are just areas within our soul that are wounded, and those wounds shadow and block God's love. And so when we are, in a sense, separated in that memory or in that area of our life, we don't feel God's love. But by uncovering it, getting help, sitting down with counselors and ministers and small groups and best friends, when we open it up, that lets the love and the light of Christ in and the healing can begin.
You mentioned this. I hear you guys talk a lot about this. Can you just tell, you know, explain the role of what community and relationship is to the healing process? Because it's a weird thing to me because most of our brokenness is caused by relationships, but yet at the same time, healing really comes in relationship. And so there's almost like a weird struggle between that because, you know, when we're broken and hurt, we deal with trust issues. How do we kind of resolve that tension of I've been hurt and damaged by relationships, but at the same time, I need those relationships, but I don't know where to find those relationships, and I'm scared to find those relationships, but I also know that I shouldn't stay isolated. How does one kind of work through that?
I'll speak to one part, and then I think maybe Eve can speak to the second about maybe boundaries, if that would be all right. It's kind of a baby of mine that small group leading and community is the hallmark of what we're all doing here, why we're here. You know, why do we come to church? Why are we regathering together? And so those communities are definitely broken, and you can get hurt in community. And then you're like in this rat race, like you kind of said, like this hamster wheel, right? And so we have this thing called unhealed wounders, and we have this thing called wounded healers. So we're all wounded. It's just how much have you dealt with your stuff, right? How down the rabbit hole did you go to kind of work through your stuff, work through your story, so that you can now minister and love better? So when people come to us for therapy and counseling, We send them back out to lots of homework and group work because we want them to practice what they've learned in the meetings, in the sessions, right, in a deeper way. And sometimes that can get a little messy, and I think that's where the boundary piece comes in, and there's different types, and I'm going to let Eve kind of talk a little bit about the different types maybe.
Yes, well, what I was thinking was when you mentioned the word fear, so the reaction to fear and pain is the natural reaction is self-protection, and that self-protection does tend to separate us from our own feelings, from others, and also from God. And so, of course, that's not His will. But to acknowledge that your brain, yourself, is trying to protect you, it's doing the best that it can, but from a deeper place, from within our spirit, we can choose to explore what's going on. And with that wounding, just being honest with yourself and with other people about what's going on. But also, like you were talking about with the boundaries, there are times when situations are unhealthy and that you should trust yourself to know who to trust with what information. Not everybody is ready to walk through something with a friend.
We have some resources there on the website there, even that would walk you through certain relationships, whether it be something that's toxic versus something that's just broken, or you know what we call normal sin pattern, right? Normal Christian walk. There's a difference between the two, and you definitely have different boundaries and requirements in how you handle that either way.
Yeah.
But in general, with small group, I mean, I think everybody has a story that they want to tell. And if I don't be the first one to open up and kind of go there and take a risk, usually everybody else starts getting involved and wants to share their story. And I think we all want to be known at the deepest level. We're just nervous and cautious about it.
Yeah.
Yeah, we find that out a lot here when we do Rooted, because Rooted does that.
Yes.
It's an amazing thing that we'll do in the fall, where we basically it's a 10-week journey for people to gather together and just chase after God. But one of the things is usually when everybody starts sharing their stories, it's like it's a total game changer, because it connects us to a place by which realizes that we're all broken, by which then wants us to encourage each other, right? But then also through that, though, right, the pinnacle of that, those communications, that relationships is building, you know, the center of that relationship around Jesus Christ as the prime mover of that relationship. And even that, I find that it's very similar, is that when we're wounded and hurt, we have trust issues with God too, right, that we have to kind of process through.
Yeah. I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were kind of sharing that they were, you know, they didn't want to say it, but they were angry with God. They were frustrated with Him. And there's a lot of Psalms that kind of see David and others wrestling with this kind of emotion, right? And I think it's a normal process, and I think God kind of sees it as, I got you. You know, if my son gets mad at me, which he can and does, let it be. Let it be so. Work it out. Let's talk it through. I'm not mad with you back. I'm here for you. I want to listen to you. I want to enter into that place with you. And I think some people get a little bit cautious about that particular emotion.
And also, it's not like He doesn't know. Right? He's more than big enough to handle our anger and wait patiently for us to be healed and back in relationship.
All right, so you mentioned wounded healers, and I get the other two kind of mixed up. What were there was three
unhealed
of them. Unhealed wounders.
And then wounded healers.
And wounded healers, and then you said there's a third group.
There is a third group. I wasn't expecting to go into it, but the third group is the person who, maybe you've met them and they know just enough information to be highly dangerous to your setting.
So I don't want to get into that, but what I want to get in is the percentage that you said were either the damaging people or unhealed wounders compared to healed wounders. What's the majority of this?
So with the wounded healers, so these are the people that have done some of the work. They've kind of looked at some of their own story. We call it inner work. You might call it spiritual formation work. There's a lot of buzz terms for it, but basically it's just sanctification. It's what God does when you start entering into your story, whether it be you were sexually assaulted, whether it was some neglect going on, whether it was a divorce, whether it was a loss, whatever it may be. Everyone's got a story. And so if I don't kind of work through some of that and have some other side Sunday stuff happening, I can then actually end up harming you while you're sharing your story. I can give you advice. I can give you problem-solving skills. I can say, hey, I know exactly like that. I've been there. Let me tell you this story about my friend. Those things are going to be pretty harmful. That person's going to shut down and not really open up. And so that doesn't really create safety. And so the difference between a wounded healer and somebody who's unhealed or somebody who is dangerous enough to be, wounding, we want to avoid that situation by doing the work. That's why your guys are doing the Shattered series in itself.
So what's the percentage of those who are wounded healers?
Yes. So I would say in the average church world, the evangelical kind of non-denominational church world, 20%.
Oh, so crud. There are 80% of us are the others.
Correct.
Right? Okay. So here's the thing why I kind of bring this up, because someone asked this question, I think is a great question. You know, most of us, we're in the 80%, and we don't even really recognize that. Maybe some of us may recognize, but some of us may not even recognize some of the hurt that we do to other people, and we'd all just be distraught if we found that out. But somebody asked this question: what if you are a person who has caused the shattering of someone you love? What is the best way to try to move forward when you see yourself as the cause of brokenness? Which I really love, because, man, that is an incredibly honest question that, you know, just really dealing with our own part of the brokenness of this world. We tend to think we're the ones, everything is broken us, and we haven't broken anybody. But based on that statistics, we are inadvertently a lot of times the ones who are breaking other people. So how do we deal with this, especially this one who's talking about a person who's caused shattering?
Well, I'm thinking of Paul. You know, look at the destruction that he caused. He thought he was doing the right thing, and whether we think we're doing the right thing or not, you know, he caused a tremendous amount of suffering. And he was shattered and broken because of it and grieved. And I think he continued from, you know, what he says throughout his life. He kept saying how that the Lord had used that situation and had humbled him. When we have hurt people, if we have the opportunity to reconcile with them and to let them know that we're sorry, because the Lord tells us to go first to our brother, you know, before we make that offering to him. If we can do that, that is important. But sometimes you might need to pray with a brother or sister in preparation for that. And sometimes there isn't an opportunity to reconcile, but the Lord knows our hearts. And I think coming before him and asking him, what are you going to do with this mess that I've created? And really putting it in his hands.
Yeah, so to what you're saying earlier is Paul was there when Stephen got stoned. There is no reconciliation to that, because the Lord, you know, he was stoned to death and left. But you see how Paul really, you know, worked that out through his redeeming relationship with the Lord, right?
Yeah, with this particular question, whether it's a guy or a girl, just that you're asking the question tells me that you have some level of self-awareness and some desire for either reconciliation or healing or forgiveness or what have you. And if this person or the person that's been offended is not willing to forgive or just not in that place, you know, like you said, what does Paul do now and how do you move forward? And so we as a community want to help walk that through. And that gets a little bit complicated, but it can be really, really healing.
And that's probably, those are the things where you want to, talk through and process that with other people and continue, obviously, processing that with the Lord as well. Here's one. Christian community is important. So what do you do when your friends, Christian friends, are unable to walk through a process and process your trauma with you? If they can't handle it due to lack of time, energy, emotional capacity, which is a great question, because one of the things that I've always wondered is how do we help people who have know somebody who's going through trauma, and like we have no idea what to do except to drop cliches that don't really necessarily help an individual.
I think I would come from the premise of you don't need to do anything. it sounds like even the question is sort of like there's a pressure to hold and carry, and you know the milk is going to spill because, or you know, there's blood on the floor. You know, people freak out over different types of blood, right? So being with someone is all that's required. When we're doing therapy, we're not giving tons of advice and lots of, phrases and wisdoms and things like that. We're sitting with someone, kind of like when Job was suffering. He just wanted his friends to sit with him. Jesus is in the garden. He just wants his friends to sit with him and be, because this is something he has to bear. So it's not so much the pressure's on to care for this person or they're going to fall apart. It is part of our calling to love well. And if we can't love well, then there's something usually stuck in our story here that we still got to unlodge so that we can then love well. We do therapy and counseling to help people then give back love, not just to kind of look at our stuff and hang out and, you know, have a good time in therapy. There's something to it that's more gospel oriented.
So is there anything, because this person is talking about they've gone through trauma and their friends aren't really, they're not able to really walk with them through that trauma. It's not their experience. They don't have the skill sets. And so how should this person go about walking that out in that relationship with their Christian friends who aren't able to help them through this? Is there any way that they can say something to their friends or encourage their friends or what not to say, or how should they walk that out with their friends?
I'm going to let Eve answer part of this, but I would say that you can't teach somebody to go someplace they haven't been themselves. You know, meaning you can't require that of them. And so she or he is probably stuck in this place of like, how do I be around my friends and still allow myself to either grieve or work through this? And so maybe it's the time where you talk to more of a professional and you say, hey, this is what's on my plate. And I'm not sure how to discern what's going on with this and how much my community plays into that. Can you help me kind of discern whether they need counseling or not? Just can you help me discern through some of the things that I'm going through so that I know where to go and how to handle it? Do you have some thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I was thinking, you know, God always, always gives us what we need. And sometimes it's readily available, and sometimes we have to search a bit for it. Like, even when God provided the manna, it didn't fall in their mouths. They had to walk over and pick it up. And so my first thought is to, when you don't have the words, to call out to the Lord in your spirit, that deep groaning that the Lord understands when you don't have the words for it. And he will provide for you. And then understand that not everybody is going to go what you've gone through. You know, there are unique experiences, and each experience is difficult for the person who goes through it. It's not, you know, it's not a competition that my suffering is worse than your suffering. It's different. And, you know, to keep seeking, to go and talk to a minister or to a counselor. The Lord has provided so many resources, even online support groups, and that, you know, church staff know where to direct people.
It's good. You know, seemed like Job's suffering was, he was all right until his friends began to speak up, right? and they're beginning to give him all sorts of advice and things like that just made it worse. So ultimately, in some ways, we should take the pressure off of ourselves, right? And just say, hey, I don't need to fix that person or figure it out for them. I just need to love and walk through them. But if there is somebody who's either trained or somebody who has that experience, to go and connect that good friend of ours with that individual. And I think it seems like the flip side of it too is, you know, as people, if we've been wounded or hurt, like we dealt with like infertility issues for a long time before we had our first son. And so, you know, people would say, you just need to have faith. And it's like, we have lots of faith and we don't have, you know, so we're kind of dealing with, you know, some of these things and, you know, frustrations in these relationships. But it was as God just kind of reminded me that, one, they don't know what they're talking about. Two, they really do care. And three, give them some grace through that, and don't hold them, I think you said, to the expectation of doing that, and was able to really process and work through that. And at the same time, feel more of the freedom of being able to say in a loving way, those words hurt us rather than really help us to walk through that. So as we kind of finish up here, what is one thing that you would tell anybody in this room or watching online what would be that one step? If they could only take one step in their own brokenness or shatteredness, what would be that one step that you would really highly encourage them to take?
For me, personally, if I look at my email list, if I look at the text that I get, which is a lot per day, it's just to reach one person. Just tell one person, you know, the one step is the one person, whether it be anonymous or whether it be over the phone or whether it be face to face, just tell somebody a little bit of what's going on. You don't have to go into your whole details, but just let one person know. It can change your whole trajectory.
Thanks. Neve, what would you like to say?
Yes. You know, to add to that, we are wired for connection. And I think it's important to open up and, like Garrett said, tell one person.
It's good. And that's why here at River Run, we talk so much about small groups, connecting. It's not about just coming here for 1 hour on Sundays. It's not enough. It's not the way that God created you to grow and to get stronger and to heal. He made us for connection and relationship with Him as the prime mover of our relationships, but with each other. It's also the reason why we had you guys here, because some of y'all are dealing with some really hard, difficult things, and you need to talk to somebody about it. And one of the things that we wanted to do is to continue to build partnerships with you guys at Tree of Life, so that, because our biggest goal is for people to find the freedom, the joy, the healing. We don't just want to say these things. We don't want to just talk about these things. We really want to help you guys, and for you guys, for us together, to help other people to build those connections, to be those safe places, and also to point people to other places where they can find their help. So again, Garrett and Eve, thank you so much for spending your time with us this morning.
Our pleasure.
Guys, give them a hand.
Thank you.
Thank you.